Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. It is a beautiful Monday afternoon. I hope you all had a nice, relaxing weekend, and I hope you were able to decompress and maybe step away from politics for just a little bit. We're excited to have you back to have some fun. A lot of follow-up stories today that were unfolding last week and for a couple weeks now that are finally starting to come to a head, including Donald Trump's hush money trial in Manhattan that is set to begin today. So for the last couple weeks, they have been, last week especially, was a lot of juror selection. They were having a lot of trouble finding people, believe it or not, in Manhattan, who were not biased towards Donald Trump. Well, they seem to have, you know, reached the best that they could at this point. I'm sure that Trump's team knows there's only so much they can do when you're in New York about getting a fair trial. So they're starting it up today. From what I've read, the former head of the National Enquirer, this guy Dave Pecker, is expected to be the first witness. So I'm sure, I mean, if his previous job means anything, maybe we'll get some scoop out of David Pecker. Also on the Trump front, Trump court case docket for today, the $175 million bond. Remember at first Trump was going to have to pay, I think it started off as like a $350 million bond. And then with interest and everything else, it ended up being over $400 million. And legal experts from across the aisle were saying, this is ridiculous. This is excessive, this punishment, just to appeal an order that or a judgment that already seems very suspicious. And so what happened was an appeals court said, okay, it can be $175 million. Now the former president is getting this $175 million, and the insurer who is giving that to him has to prove or convince a state judge that he's good for the money, that in other words, he is backed by good assets, and that the bond is good. So this continues to unfold, more jumping through hoops for a ridiculous case at its core, but there's just so much noise around it. Now, meanwhile, over the weekend, the college peace activists, you know, chanting death to America, continued to make their parents proud. I always just think of the parents. I always just think of turning on the television, being like, is that Amy? Is that Amy in the autonomous zone at Yale? Is that Brian holding the sign that says death to America, chanting we are Hamas? He said he couldn't come home for Easter because he had studying to do. What is he up to out there? But there's so much of this nuttiness at college campuses, and it's made its way, the anti-Israel, anti-America contingency, these protests at Columbia, they're catching on like wildfire. They also are now on at Yale. They've got this, they made 45 arrests, by the way, at Yale University. Yale students stab Jewish student in eye, tear down American flags during campus protests against the U.S., they have created an autonomous zone, which I guess is kind of like the Chaz that they had in Seattle. It's this area. See, at Columbia, they just had the encampment. They didn't have a Chaz. But at Yale, they decided we're going to create like our own segment of society where all of this anti-Semitism can flourish and no one can tell us that we can't be here. So that's what's going on. Now, meanwhile, at the same time, I do have an update for people on Ilhan Omar's daughter. I did not realize that Ilhan Omar had a daughter until last week, until I found out that she was suspended from her school. Barnard. Is that how you say it, Emma? It always feels like I want to say Bernard, but it's spelled Barnard. I guess it's like the sister school of Columbia. She was evicted from her dorm. And she's upset that she can't use the dining hall and that she couldn't get all her clothes and that, you know, it was very chaotic the way that she had to get out of there. And so she is also on board with trying to elicit sympathy from people for partaking in these, air quotes here, protests, saying things like death to America, we are Hamas, we honor the martyrs, all of those things. So we'll wait a little bit to play the victim violin for Isra, Ilhan Omar's daughter. We'll do that later in the show. I actually wanted first to start with a topic that I know you're all going to have opinions on. I really do want to hear what you have to say, because I was discussing this morning with Sean Spicer, and I was, when it comes to the Ukraine foreign aid bill, I know it's not just Ukraine. They broke this up into four parts. So there's a part for Taiwan. There's a part for Israel. There's a huge chunk for Ukraine. They always seem to get the most funding. And then there's the fourth part of it that involves national security and a TikTok ban, which a lot of people say, actually, if you read into it, is pretty good. So they bundle this all together and they pass this massive aid bill. And now this is from the AP. The House has approved $95 billion in foreign aid for Ukraine, Israel, and other U.S. allies in a rare weekend session. Now, this is where my description of it would differ from the AP, but I'm going to read it anyway. As Democrats and Republicans banded together after months of hard right resistance over renewed American support for repelling Russia's invasion. Obviously, I see things a little bit differently than the Associated Press. But the point is, this is all but a sure thing. It will go to the Senate. It will probably pass, I would say, by tomorrow. And then Joe Biden will sign this. And billions of your dollars, here's always the common theme with these aid bills, billions of your tax dollars will go anywhere but here. So the comments made on the House floor, because again, this was a weekend session, so a lot of these cuts are just kind of starting to go viral, were very concerning and also very, very telling about how Democrats feel about this. So Jerry Connolly, he's a rep from Virginia, and he made mention of why he thinks this is so important. Can I have cut 10? This is a Democrat Representative Gerald Connolly from Virginia, cut 10.
We have to deal with our board. Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border. It's the border between depraved autocracy and freedom-loving people seeking our democratic way of life. Do we have a stake in that outcome? Yes. Undeniably, yes.
You see, I'm all for hyperbole. Like, I love to talk. I love when people just make a ton of analogies and speak and wax poetic. I love all that. But if we take all that out of it, like, I understand this guy's overall point. I don't agree with it, but I understand the point he's trying to make. If we just talk basic geography, what he is saying is false. And by the way, if our border was the Russia-Ukraine border, our border would be far more secure than it is now, because there would have been, I think, what, like hundreds of billions of dollars thus far sent to our border, but it's not. We only send that money to their border. And so Connolly is wrong on a lot of fronts. And the reason I want to talk about this is because now, obviously, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massie, some other Republicans are floating this idea of having a motion to vacate to kick out Speaker Johnson. And I was discussing this with Sean Spicer because I said, well, yeah, Sean, like, okay, so they kick out Mike Johnson and let's say we get Hakeem Jeffries. Is there really a difference? We're passing all the stuff the Democrats want. Now Democrats are actually, Jim Clyburn is actually floating the idea of having Mike Johnson's back. If they were, Republicans were to attempt to oust him, Clyburn is saying, well, maybe the Democrats would rally around him and actually keep Mike Johnson in there, which shows you what a threat they find Mike Johnson to be to their agenda if they're going to stick together to save him, to save his ass from being ousted. That doesn't bode well for us, that our speaker is someone that Democrats want in there. But I said that to Sean Spicer. I said, you know, what difference does it make? Like, I had Chris Bedford on. He said the same thing. What would a Hakeem Jeffries do that differently than what Mike Johnson's doing? And he did say to me, which I hadn't thought about, he said, if we don't have control of the House, and who knows if we're going to be able to keep it after this election, because it's very close. It's very close. Mike Gallagher's leaving. It couldn't be tighter right now. But we do have it. And if we didn't have it, then there's a lot of things that go away with that. A lot of these hearings, a lot of these investigations, a lot of the subpoena power. And you might say, well, really, what is that doing? That was my first reaction. I didn't say this, but I was about to say, that doesn't do much for me either. Like, I like some good grandstanding for the show's sake, but for the average American, I don't think it's really moving the needle that much. I don't think it's changing your life if let's say Jim Jordan has a heated back and forth with Alejandro Mayorkas. I don't think that's helping the average person. It's good for Twitter. It's good for me. It's good for Fox or for Newsmax. But beyond that, I don't think it makes much of a difference. But then the other part I hadn't thought about was then they can start having hearings of their own. And that's something. They can start subpoenaing people. They can start up with the January 6th of it all. They can start up with these bogus investigations. And I don't want them to be able to do that. So I'm a little torn here. And that's why I'm throwing it out to the callers. I want to hear what you guys have to say. I want to hear what you guys think. Is this a good idea? Should we try to do another circus-style voting of Kevin McCarthy? I tend to think not. I tend to think it's a waste of time. I tend to think we'll be in the same or a worse position. But I'm open to your ideas. So the number is 844-500-4242. Let me know what you think. Let me know if I'm off the mark here. Because even this morning, I've gone so back and forth on it. Like, part of me is saying, how? And you know what the other part that drives me crazy? So I'm just learning about this whole idea of you get into D.C., you get an important job, you become privy to these top secret classified intelligence briefings. You basically get to get in on the skiff, is what they call it. And then what happens in those briefings is the national security, you know, the deep state, they sit you down and they give you all this information. And you can't confirm the information and you can't tell anyone the information. But it's basically like, this is why you need to pass XYZ, because look how dangerous everything is. And whatever Mike Johnson heard during that intelligence briefing, I guess scared the socks off of him. And he came back and he said, I know I've been talking about border security for the last 9 months, but we need to pass Ukraine. We need to send them all this money. And again, the cop out there is he doesn't have to explain to us what he saw. He doesn't have to. We're never going to know. We just have to basically trust him. But here's where I have an issue with that. Let's say that's all true. And they sat him down and he turned ghost white when he heard all this information. And they said, this is so important. This is why you need to pass money to Ukraine. And he goes, oh, now I do see why it's so important that we send another $60 billion to the Ukraine. Why not at that point go, it's so urgent, it's so important, let's do it right now and pass our border security? Like, in other words, if it's so urgent that he has to do it, that has to mean it's just as urgent for the other side. So that has to mean that the leverage we have of saying, you guys want this so badly, so do something for us. We're going to get something out of this. We're going to stop this madness. We're going to shut down the border. That if it truly is this life or death, have to do it, you know, the clock is ticking situation, then they should be movable. Then they should be the ones who will be on board with doing what we want. It shouldn't just be, oh, yeah, you're right. This is all so awful. Okay, yeah, forget everything I said. We're on board with you. But what kind of negotiating is that? 844-500-4242. I'll take your calls on this. I want to hear your thoughts when we come back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. The anti-Israel protesters all over the country, especially on student campuses. Now the new chant is, never forget October 7th. Really a bunch of hateful anti-Israel, anti-American monsters that are, at the same time, they want to be the villains, they also want to be the victims. The second you tell them, hey, you can't come to school here anymore, what? My key pass isn't working. Oh, I feel so, so, so bad for you. Emma, actually, you said you were able to, can I say this on the air? Emma was in the Yale. Wait, no, where were you? Yale?
Yeah, I was visiting New Haven, visiting a friend there, and I actually witnessed the encampment.
Really? Give us details. You're on the ground. What was going on?
Yes. So there were tents everywhere, which I personally didn't have a tent when I was in college because I had a dorm, but I guess a lot of students did. So there were tents set up, and there was some sort of like kumbaya guitar circle going on. And then every so often they would do like a football chant, and then everyone would go woohoo at the end. So it wasn't, there wasn't much mourning or like a conversion of souls happening. It was more like cheery and excitement. I did not witness the poking in the eye though.
You did, yeah, that is a story that I saw today. I think I saw it on Breitbart. Let me grab this. It says, no, post-millennial. It says, Yale student stabs Jewish student in eye, tears down American flags. One of the protesters allegedly stabbed a Jewish student in the eye with a Palestinian flagpole during the protest. The victim, who has been identified as Sahar Tartak, is the editor-in-chief of the Yale Free Press and was there documenting the event, according to the New York Post. Tartak told the outlet that the anti-Israel student mob formed a blockade around her and a friend after they had singled them out for wearing Hasidic Jewish attire. There's hundreds of people taunting me and waving the middle finger at me, and then this person waves a Palestinian flag in my face and jabs it in my eye, she said. That's the part of this, and I hate to call out this group as inconsistent, but they seem to be very anti-war, right? That's what they want with a ceasefire. And yet they're wreaking havoc here, and they don't seem opposed to violence when it comes to getting their message across here. That's a little bit of a contradiction. I would also add in that they want a ceasefire, but they don't seem to be upset when other countries that are not Israel do not adhere to a ceasefire. Like a lot of this cheering on of Iran, for example, after the ballistic missile strike that was now a week ago, I didn't see the same calls for a ceasefire. And something I'm really glad that a lot of people point out is you never hear about a ceasefire in Ukraine. Like no one ever, you can't even talk about a peaceful resolution in Ukraine without being deemed some sort of puppet of Putin. But ceasefire is only a word I hear with these pacifists who are stabbing people in the eyes at these college campuses. Today's poll question is brought to you by FlipLock. You may already have a home surveillance system, but what's going to physically stop an intruder from breaking down your door? The original FlipLock is the answer. I love FlipLock. I really encourage everyone to get one. Get more than one because you can send one to your kids if they're at college for the first time. It gives you a lot of peace of mind. It's not very expensive and it's very easy to install. I really love this device. I think it can make a big difference. So it's FLIPLOK.com. That's FlipLock.com. Emma Foley, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question is, should the Republicans oust Speaker Mike Johnson? Yes or no?
I don't think they'll have the votes because there was a lot of Republicans who went on board with this Ukraine foreign aid funding who would not vote to oust Johnson. I think it would let people know that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Massey and those guys mean what they say. But I think that worst case scenario, it not only doesn't pass, but Jim Clyburn and Democrats come to Mike Johnson's aid and then we look even worse. So I'm going to say no.
No is in the lead with 69%.
Wow.
Yes is 31%.
Okay, we'll be right back. We'll talk more about this. 844-500-4242.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. So a lot of people are looking to Trump for his reaction to this massive foreign aid package. And I do think that his stance on this has changed over the course of the last couple of months. And I think that a slight change that they made in this package could be why Trump isn't at least outwardly criticizing it. It said the Democrat-run Senate had, this is from the Wall Street Journal, had passed a similar bill in February, but it languished in the House, where Johnson had a razor-thin majority and a large contingent of Ukraine skeptics. With Ukraine running short of supplies, some proponents had seized on the loan idea to get Trump on board. Now, the loan idea, this key change that was made, is to give the billions of dollars for economic aid in the form of forgivable loans, not grants. And it actually aligns with an idea that Trump floated months earlier. So maybe that's why. I know he was on with Chris Stegall earlier, and he wasn't as critical of this massive aid package as you might have thought he would be. But it hasn't stopped Republicans in the House from slamming this. And if you're like Marjorie Taylor Greene or you're Thomas Massie, some Republicans are offering up this idea that they will vote to oust Mike Johnson. Now, if it comes to that, a big question is going to be how Democrats handle it, because if you look at the breakdown of this bill, the House voted 311 to 112 to approve the Ukraine aid. It was backed by all Democrats, but slightly less than half of Republicans. So the Democrats were the game changer here. Now, they could also be the game changer if Marjorie Taylor Greene pulls the trigger on this motion to vacate. Here's what James Clyburn had to say on MSNBC over the weekend if that were to be the case. This is Cut 9.
And I think we'll have to wait and see. If this is an evolution rather than the revolution,
right?
I'm inclined to be supportive, though I'm going to follow the leadership of Hakeem Jeffries. Mm-hmm. He's in the room. I'm not in those rooms anymore. And I will talk with him or continue to talk with him to see exactly how we ought to conduct ourselves. But let me say this. After this vote is over today, I'm interested in seeing how the speaker reacts to the votes. If you recall, what got Kevin McCarthy in trouble was the way he reacted to the votes.
His response after the vote. Yes.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I'd agree with that, but here's what I will say. Trump's stance has definitely changed when it comes to Speaker Johnson. And keep in mind, last time we had Caroline Levitt on, we were discussing a variety of different issues. And one thing I said to her was, oh, Mike Johnson, you know, as much as he and Trump don't see eye to eye on everything, they're meeting today to talk about election integrity. So I don't know if at that fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago, if maybe Trump said, listen, if you're going to do this and give them all this aid, you've got to put it in the terms of a loan so we can at least get paid back. And he got some senators and other people to agree with him on that front. But here's a flashback to Speaker Johnson. And the reason I want to talk about this is because Gerald Connolly is making waves today for his comment that the Ukrainian-Russian border is our border. Now, of course, that is not true. Our border, if Gerald Connolly wants to see it, is very frequently shown on Fox News, and it is being completely overrun with Chinese nationals, with illegal aliens from all over the country, from all over the world. They are pouring into this border that is wide open, especially in parts of San Diego, in towns in Texas. That is our border. I don't know what channels he's watching, but the Russia-Ukraine border is not our border. And that clip is getting a lot of attention, but I also want to play another clip that got me thinking. This was Representative Connolly, Cut 11.
Will we rise to the occasion? Will we stand shoulder to shoulder with our Ukrainian brothers and sisters who for 1,151 days have been holding off the depraved, thuggish dictator Vladimir Putin, who has respected no norms of warfare? He's targeted children in hospitals and schools. He's bombed apartment blocks, killing thousands.
Now, my question for Representative Connolly would be, what is the plan here? Besides listening to you go on and on and on about all of these things and how bad Putin is, what is the plan? Because I don't think there's anything humane or productive about sending over I think the number now is $113 billion to Ukraine if this is a war they cannot win. I know I'm not allowed to say that. I know that's not considered polite right now to say that there doesn't seem to be a strategy But that falls on not just the people sending the money, but also on the president of the United States. What is the strategy? How can you make this as short a war as possible? And that clearly is not the end goal here. The end goal seems to be the blank checks. And I want to read you something from The Federalist, okay? Says, of course, neither McConnell nor any other D.C. politico who backs U.S. funding for Ukraine has ever bothered to articulate what America's strategy is for accomplishing such a feat. And therein lies the main problem. More than 2 years and $113 billion later, Ukraine isn't any closer to beating Russia than the day Moscow launched its invasion. There has been no explanation from the Biden administration or any Ukraine First member of Congress on what they view as a reasonable resolution to the conflict. Now, a lot of the same people, if you took out a Kamala Harris Venn diagram, a lot of the same people who almost immediately were calling for ceasefires and immediately asking Israel not to defend itself, not to respond, to essentially just wait for another October 7th to happen, those same people shudder at even the mention that there should be some sort of plan in place for bringing this war to an end. And that's the part of it that has always struck me as bizarre. Like, I remember there's this rotunda near where I live and people stand out there with these signs that say, ceasefire. Israel, it's time for a ceasefire. And immediately I was like, this was right after October 7th. Everybody got their cardboard posters out and their markers. That's the thing, Emma. You know, you mentioned tents. Everybody's got this stuff on standby. I don't know if we should be prepared. If there's anything you feel passionately enough that at some point, if the conch shell comes out and you are summoned, you will want to have a poster board and a giant magic marker. But it would seem like a lot of people have those at the ready. And I just feel like we are both unprepared in that front.
Yeah, my causes aren't really tent causes.
They're not. Okay. And you're not really an outdoorsy kind of girl.
I'm an indoor cat.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. Yeah, so, okay, we won't get the tents, but maybe some poster boards. That's just always, that's a good middle ground. So in this case, these people have these signs out, you know, ceasefire for, you know, Israel, please have a ceasefire, Israel, Israel. And I'm driving by and I'm like, I've never seen you guys before. And Ukraine has been engaged in a war with Russia for years now, and I have never seen you people in my life. And about 3 months later, I think they got some feedback from people. Someone else in the group had a sign that said ceasefire for Ukraine too, but it was only like an afterthought, only like because we have to say, because we're calling for Israel, we should say that peace for Ukraine. But even then, I think they said peace instead of ceasefire. Peace for Ukraine, which, you know, that can have all sorts of different meanings. Ceasefire is a little bit more direct, like lay down your arms and surrender essentially to the animals that make up Hamas. And so more than 2 years and $113 billion later, Ukraine isn't any closer to beating Russia. Now, a part of this that made me nervous right when I heard it was when Speaker Johnson, who again, he went from, I'm not going to play you the flashbacks. If you want to see them though, Don Jr. put up a montage of all the flashbacks of Speaker Johnson when he used to beat his chest about the border. And it truly did seem like he believed it, because why wouldn't he? Why would I think he's lying about his desire to secure the border? Seems like a good guy. It would seem like it's important to him. Now, there's theories, you know, that maybe he's being blackmailed, or, you know, maybe there's something in that skiff that scared him. There's all these theories. But what really made me apprehensive was when he was on with Jake Tapper, and I didn't end up playing this cut, but I think it's important to play today. He's on with Jake Tapper, and he's talking about why it's so important to fund Ukraine. This is cut 15.
Look, we know what the timetable is. We know the urgency in Ukraine and in Israel. And we are going to stand by Israel, our close ally and dear friend, and we're going to stand for freedom and make sure that Vladimir Putin doesn't march through Europe. These are important responsibilities. A strong America is good for the entire world. Since World War II, really, really, the responsibility for the free world has been shifted onto our shoulders, and we accept that role. We're an exceptional nation.
Now, there's so much in there that you could take issue with. The idea that a strong America is good for the world, I wouldn't disagree, but I wouldn't say what we are right now is strong, thanks to our wide open border, thanks to inflation, thanks to so many of these policies. It's like, if anything, I think Jesse Kelly said at one point, we're on a suicide mission. We've been given a nation from greater men than we are, and we're on a suicide mission to destroy it. So, no, I don't think right now America is strong, and we're certainly not strong enough to be giving hundreds of billions of dollars to other people while leaving our border wide open. But the other part of that, where he talks about this idea of Putin marching through Europe, it immediately brought me back to a column that we had John Davidson on about last week. And I want to read you something. He said, "The Putin will march through Europe line was preposterous when it was trotted out over 2 years ago. Today, it's indefensible. A worn-out neocon talking point that no one, not even those robotically repeating it like Johnson is now, really believes. Moscow, which has yet to secure even the areas of eastern Ukraine it claims to have annexed, has no ability to threaten Europe militarily. And even if it did, Russia has a unique strategic interest in Ukraine it does not have in Poland or other NATO member countries, let alone the whole of Europe." So when you hear that talking point, and it's unfortunate it's coming from the Republican Speaker of the House, but you should immediately have your antennas up when people say, oh, you know, if we don't stop Putin now, Putin's going to march through Europe. There's a lot indicating that would not be the case. Ted, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Ted?
Grace, how you doing?
Yeah, what's going on?
Good. First of all, I want to thank you for bringing up this topic. You're spot on. And the bottom line is I've been involved with the America First movement for, well, over 25 years. And this is Speaker Johnson's vote for Ukraine funding is the worst betrayal I have ever seen by any Republican at any time. This is beyond more serious than you can even imagine. I'm just so upset about it. I hope there's a motion to vacate. I hope everyone is on board with it. I don't care who is in replace of him. What he did, it was aided and abetted a country that is headed by a communist and a person who wants to eliminate the Orthodox Christian Church. It's unimaginable, even if you don't agree with me on those items, how can we be funding a war when we're bankrupt and our own country is being invaded? It's an act of war by Mike Johnson.
Ted, I'm sorry, your connection is not great. You said you hope everyone's on board with ousting him. I don't even know if I'm on board with it, because I think you have to think to the next step and who are we going to get to replace him. I don't think anybody wants the job at this point. It's not a great position to be in with this slim of a majority. And I also fear that Hakeem Jeffries would end up getting the job, or that there wouldn't be enough votes to oust him, because we did see that the House voted 311 to 112. They had about half of Republicans on board. I don't think those people will vote to oust Mike Johnson. And then if by chance Republicans do decide to show a little unity and oust this guy, Clyburn is threatening to save his ass. And then we look, I know it's not a how we look. I know the optics at this point for Republicans, that ship sailed a long time ago. But then it's even more of a Charlie Foxtrot. Like, now you have Jim Clyburn stepping in to save our House Speaker. And it's a mess. Seems like that's the theme with Republicans. It's always a mess. All, you know, my friend used to say about Democrats, all they had to do was not be crazy. Now I think you could say it about Republicans. All they had to do was not be feckless. All they had to do was not be the biggest pushovers known to man. They couldn't do it. They couldn't manage. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get right back to you. Trump's live right now. He's speaking after court wraps for the day. I'm sure we'll get this sound later, but he has just been on a roll in New York. I don't think any Democrats planned on that, but we will take sound from that in just a little bit. Face it, the world is a scary place. It seems like the current administration is on a mission to make life more dangerous while at the same time making it harder for Americans to protect themselves. We see that every day. Home invasions, break-ins. It's really, really scary. And when you go home, that should be the place where you feel the safest. You should be able to shut your eyes at night and have peace of mind and knowing that you are safe and protected and that no one's getting in there. And that is what the Flip Lock can do. It's a security door lock. It is unpickable, unbreakable, and it's 10 times stronger than a deadbolt. My mom loves a deadbolt, Emma. She always says to me, if I'm staying at a hotel, even if I'm just in my house by myself for the night, she'll always call me up and say, did you deadbolt it? And I'll say, yes, mom, the deadbolt is on. But now that I have the flip lock, it's even better because this can withstand over 1,500 pounds of pressure. So if you're like my mom, you have a daughter or son and they're at a dorm or they're moving into an apartment and you get nervous about them protecting themselves and staying safe, this is a really great gift. And it's really great for you too because it gives you the gift of peace of mind. You should be doing everything you can to protect yourself. That does not mean you have to spend a lot of money. It does not mean you have to install high-tech things like cameras and surveillance. That's all great if you can, but this is an easy, very reasonable way to make yourself safer. It's a great line of defense, and it just needs to work. FlipLock has it covered. Go to FlipLock.com and save 20% with code GRACE20. That's FlipLock.com and save 20%, code GRACE20. You can check out their website to see how this device works. I would really encourage that to watch the tutorial and see how simple it is. And then let me know when you get it and let me know how much you love it. It's FlipLock.com. Use code GRACE20 to save 20%. We'll be right back.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We have people on the lines who want to talk about this rare weekend session in which the House passed the foreign aid package. It will go to the Senate. It will be signed by Joe Biden. It will probably all be done by the end of the week. So let's go to Arthur. What are your thoughts, Arthur? Go ahead.
Well, you know what, Grace, thanks for taking my call. And as always, a fabulous show. And you're a fabulous host.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, what I'd like to say is that, you know what, you make the deals you can when you can. And we don't have any power thanks to our traitorous Republican reps who keep resigning and leaving us with the slim majority we have is practically non-existent now. And the last thing we need is Hakeem Jeffries to be speaker. That being said, the most important critical thing for my part was to get immediate aid to Israel because that's been on hold for way too long. And as long as this regime is in office, we were going to have to fund Ukraine because they don't want to initiate a peace agreement and come to some kind of agreement, which is always a possibility, but they haven't even made an attempt. And also, the border is not the issue of Congress. Congress has already made the laws to prohibit what's going on today. It was executive orders by Trump that closed the border, and it was executive orders by Biden that opened the border wide open.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Arthur. And it's not the first time I've heard that this morning where people are saying, listen, the issue is not Congress, as Joe Biden has always claimed. The issue is just having the will to want to close the border, to want to stop this. I will say this, though. Fox News' Bill Malugin, who is really great when it comes to everything having to do with our southern border, he did put out on Twitter that he received a lot of texts from Border Patrol agents and ICE contacts, and he was letting them know about the passage of this $95 billion and that none of it was going to border security. And the responses back were unbelievable. Another person wrote, we're screwed. And another person wrote, so messed up. So the Border Patrol guards are not thrilled with this package either. We'll talk a lot more when we get back and we'll take more of your calls. It's Monday and this is the Grace Curley Show.